I like that shit. Hey, I like the way you moved out there. You were trained very well. Check that out. It's a shitty dime. See the small hairs, undeveloped seeds, all the stems in it. You see how immature it is? That's classic brick pack Mexican. That's garbage. Let me see. Give me. Yeah, it's old too. Shit's probably from last year. To be truly effective, a good narcotics agent must know and love narcotics. In fact, a good narcotics agent should have narcotics in his blood. Smoke it.
Oh, really? Right now?
This ain't a test. Just take a hit.
You know, I'm kind of tired, and to be honest, I'm more of an indica guy. I don't really smoke schwag like that.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, right. If I was a dealer, you'd be dead by now, motherfucker. You turn shit down on the street, and the chief brings your wife a crisply folded flag. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Okay, geez. Take it easy, fine.
Virgin lungs. Man up now. Man up, nigga. Man up. Go ahead, dog. You didn't even get it. Get it. Go. Yo, shut the fuck up and just wait.
All right. So now can we go beat up some minorities?
Yeah, nigga. I'm still fucking with you. Still waters run deep. Still Snoop Dogg and D.R.E. Nah, nigga. Guess who's back?
Hello, welcome to Lower Your Expectation, Episode 5. Today's intro will be quite short. I want to get kind of to the meat of the whole episode today, which is a great panel discussion I have with Nikki Moranis and Adam Casey Elder, both some awesome, funny local comedians that I managed to get on the show. So without further ado, let's jump right into the conversation. So I have Adam and Nikki on the show today. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Today is like the official Santa Barbara County kind of reopening. So, you know, this is the first time I've seen people who I don't live with in like 2 months. I've kind of forgotten what in real life like conversations and how to handle that. So how has your kind of lockdown been?
Wow, I didn't realize that. I thought Santa Barbara had been open up here. Wow, I live in Ventura, so we've been kind of semi-open for a while now, and I haven't been really quarantining like I should be. I walk around because I apparently don't care, and I'm apparently
Have
a
you
jerk.
Been going to businesses and bars and things of this nature?
I've been out to a bar or two recently. My birthday was Tuesday.
So, happy birthday, by the way.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It was National Sex Day. 6/9.
That is a fantastic time to have a birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. I didn't get any, but thank you. It was okay, still National Sex Day. It's been kind of weird to be out at a bar. You feel kind of like a jerk, but it's been nice to drink a cocktail I didn't make.
That's
I'll
true.
Tell you that. But it's been nice to see other people that were not my cat. So, or my parents or my siblings. So yeah, that's been nice for sure.
Was there, at the bar, was there like social distancing or masks, or was it just like a normal bar?
No, it was definitely social distancing. Like you had to wear a mask to go into the bar to order a drink and then go sit outside on the patio and then take your mask off.
Oh, okay.
Cool beans. But there have been some people that just, clustering in large groups and not social distancing. I think there's been a very even, what's the word I'm looking for? It's been even. People social distancing and people not social distancing has been my experience.
It's been in Santa Barbara. I haven't noticed, like Rev knows, it's been really slow to open up. In the past week at restaurants, you can finally go in and get a table and get yourself a meal. And when like only half of the seats are open, but you can go in and there's not that many people. So it's slowly starting to open up. I don't know when, but yeah, I don't know when the actual everything's going to be back the way it will be was before. I guess it kind of will never be.
I don't know if it ever will be.
It's kind of a depressing thing to say, but that seems to be the impression that this is going to be kind of a very slow adjustment.
Yeah.
That we're going to be living like this for a while, and yeah.
Like, so. I heard they were opening movie theaters today.
Really?
But with, you know, like, little groups.
Okay, yeah.
Like, not a full movie theater, but that even that idea, like, a friend of mine and I went to the movies all the time, And honestly, the idea scares the crap out of him.
That kind of sounds ideal to me because I love going to the movies, but I usually, unless Guy Burton was dragging me to the latest superhero movie, right, and there's like a big like group thing, a bunch of people going, I like to wait for like the movie has been out for like 5 weeks, so there's no one in the theater, so I can just go in and just have like, you know, half the place to myself,
right,
and just watch the fucking movie.
Yeah,
that's like my favorite thing to do. I'm embarrassed about it, but God damn it. Yeah, I love that shit.
Yeah, no, I love going to the movie theater. I hate people that talk or are on their phone, and I want to punch them in the face hard. Hard.
Okay, this is absolutely 100% true story. I was in San Francisco. I was at this independent movie theater. I was watching, I can't remember what the movie was, but there was this guy who kept talking and talking and talking. And finally, I just couldn't take him. I was like, excuse me, but if you're not stop talking, I will take you outside and beat the crap out of you. So for the love of God, stop talking. And I just went back to my seat.
Did he stop?
He stopped talking.
Okay.
But that is not the end of the story.
Oh.
I ran into him in the bathroom later. Fun fact about that guy. He was a Buddhist monk. He was a Buddhist monk and immediately apologized for talking and was like, I'm very sorry. I was with my friend. We haven't seen each other in a long time. We're very excited to be around each other. So we went to this movie. Obviously, I guess we probably should have gone to a bar or a restaurant or something, but we were just excited to see each other. And we just, we're kind of talking, but yeah. So I'm like, oh my God, really? Really? You couldn't just be an asshole. You had to have been just a nice guy. I misunderstood. Like, right? Really? Come on, man.
Do you guys ever had friends you're with who will ask you what is happening in the movie before the plot has like revealed anything to you as well?
Okay, I can.
Yes.
That is, I was not going to say anything about this, but my roommate left. So I can say that, my roommate, like every time I watch a movie, my roommate will constantly ask me what is happening, what's going on. And like, dude, I watched the movie this exactly like you are. But the weird thing is, I did the exact same thing to people, and they gave me the exact same response. So I have no right to like complain about this. I just like go ahead and have a good spirit about it, and like, I'll just answer the question. But yeah, he asked me so many fucking questions.
Yeah, what's going on? You're like, so your guess is as good as mine, dude. Make something up, and then
it's like, well, Keanu Reeves' girlfriend was kidnapped by aliens, so I'm probably guessing the next scene, Keanu Reeves is going to go after the aliens. I'm just guessing, but I think that's what's going to happen.
I think the good guys will win in the end.
I probably will. They probably will.
It's Freddy Krueger. It's actually Freddy Krueger is going to... I know, shocking. You wouldn't think Freddy Krueger was going to show up in a Keanu Reeves movie.
I did not think that.
And that's the twist, and I'm giving it away. Yeah.
Wow. That is amazing.
You're never going to see it coming, except that I told you.
That's awesome. So, we're kind of talking about the things reopening. I have a topic on here that maybe you're familiar with, and it's about kind of COVID snitches. To me, the most annoying thing that I hate about this is like whenever it first started coming out, I would see like some kids skateboarding or something and be like, God damn it. They can't be outside and having fun. They need to be locked up. So I want to know if you had any experience with that, with like people snitching on you or maybe, cause I think for me, it's just cause I'm jealous. Like I'll see my friends on their Instagram, like hanging out together. Most of my friends live in Texas, where they don't give a fuck about this. Like they're over it. But they still like will rant like, oh, I don't see people wearing masks. And I'm like, bitch, I saw you with like three people playing pool, like, and you took pictures of yourself. And I'm just saying it because I'm jealous. I'm just jealous about it.
Yeah.
So I was curious if you had any experiences like that.
I have seen friends on social media that complain about other people. And they are people who I think would snitch, definitely would snitch. And they post the colorful posters that they may have made that say, you can't get together with 10 people at your house, and you can't get together at the park with 10 people in social distance. And you can't. Why not? If you can go to the store and shop, I don't. And somebody made a really funny video of making fun of socialites like laying on their floor being like, so we quarantined together in Joshua Tree this weekend. And then we quarantined for brunch at Sarah's house. And then like we quarantined at Becky's. And then I can't wait for everything to get back to normal. And that's kind of what all these fucking assholes sound like. And I'm the dick. Like I went to Surfers Point in Ventura and walked around the beach, and I went to post pictures on Instagram because I hadn't left the fucking house. And I went to like tag Surfers Point. I went, maybe I won't tell anybody where I went. Maybe I won't advertise to the world. I was all, give me this, you fucking cockfaces. Like I left the goddamn house. I live in a 300 square foot granny flat with my cat. Bag of dicks, everybody. Like I'm leaving the house, and I don't care. There are people out there I think have nothing better to do but snitch on other people. Literally, you have nothing better to do. And I don't understand. If somebody is seriously walking around blatantly and it's a health issue, that's one thing. But otherwise, fuck off and read a book. I swear to God.
Just leave each other the fuck alone.
Seriously.
Like, honestly. Seriously. Like, there are some people, yeah, they are fucking scumbags and they're intentionally being dicks and they need to be shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
But overall, and this is something I honestly, because you were talking about this, and I noticed a lot of this has to do with social media and with like Facebook posts and people shaming other people and people having to get their opinion out there and think that their opinion is the most important opinion that's ever existed in the history of mankind. Yes. And everyone needs to listen to this. And this is what I want to compliment about, give you a compliment for, because you are, I have to say, the best Facebook person out there.
Me?
Yes, you. You, little old Nikki Mandakuchala, whatever the fuck your last name is.
Mandakuchala, that's my name now. Fuck exactly. Changing it.
It's fuck yeah.
Marinus, that close enough.
Close enough. I just assumed you were related to that guy from, oh God, he was in the, who was that guy? He's married to the hot Hispanic woman from Modern Family.
Yes.
That guy. You know what I'm talking about.
Aquaman?
Not Aquaman.
Oh, no. I know who you're talking about.
He was, he's some...
God damn it.
Okay, I hate to admit I know this, but in the stripper movie...
Yeah, Magic Mike.
Magic Mike stripper movie, he's the guy who has like the really, really, really big
dick.
Yes. Yeah, he's that guy.
I have a tiny dick, but a huge clit.
Okay.
Huge. And her and I have the same body, like I'm built like her.
Mm-hmm.
What is her name? She's on Modern Family.
Oh, which one?
She's built like Salma Hayek.
Oh, yeah.
Sophia Vergara.
Yeah.
Yes, her husband.
Yes, Sophia Vergara's husband. Joey Manteling.
Yes. I'm sitting here with a handheld computer in my hand, and I could look up his name. But yes, no, that's not my last name. I'm Greek. I don't know that he is Greek.
Okay.
It's all Greek to me.
Pretty much,
except for the stuff that's not. But.
And you're Irish, right, Adam?
I'm Irish, yes. It's basically the same thing. Oppressed white people over Europe.
Right?
Yeah. I assume. I don't know much about the Greeks except the ancient ones. Everything after Rome, I don't know anything about the Greek history. I assumed you guys did fine because you're still around. Right? So obviously you didn't, you did pretty good.
We're okay. We like little boys.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's okay. Whatever. I'll just gonna sail past that point.
Do it.
And keep moving on.
Keep moving.
Okay, so...
Anyway, my point was, you're really great at Facebook. Because you'll talk about your life, what's going on in your life. And so it's like you're connecting with people and you're being honest, but you'll make it funny or you'll make it ironic and you'll post that. So many people on Facebook, it's like they're trying to like piss people off, they're trying to make an enemy, or they'll just state their opinion. But they don't try to be witty. They don't try to be funny. It's just their opinion. And I can be like, yeah, that's a good opinion. I agree with that opinion. But there's not much else to it. It's like, you don't like, you think Donald Trump's a bad president too? Really? I thought I was the only one.
Well,
I can't believe there's more than one of us. That is so amazing to me.
Wow, really remarkable stuff, you guys. Yeah.
So remarkable.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate amazing. That. Thank you.
You know
I'll keep it up.
Yes, please do. Yeah.
Huzzah. More dick and fart jokes.
More dick and fart jokes, I say, unto thee, yes.
Ah, huzzah.
You'll be making movies with Judd Apatow in no time.
Go team.
Go team, yeah.
Sweet.
Do you ever say, like, funny things on your Facebook and then have, like, family members or anyone, like, contact you? Because I have that happen to me all the time. Like, I, with my Facebook, it's all about just being funny. I made that rule for myself, like, 10 years ago. I was like, this is not, like, my political soapbox. I'm not going to preach. I just want funny stuff. But sometimes I'll, you know, make a joke, especially if something bad that's happening in my life, and my grandpa will like first of all message like, hey, you need to call me right now, like on the comment, and then I'll have to explain to him like it's a little different online, you know, I'm just kind of venting, you know, it's just for fun. Have you ever had something like that happen?
There's only once or twice. Like, I think I made a joke about doing drugs, doing like piles of blow and drinking champagne, and my aunt said something to my mom about Nikki's doing drugs, and because my aunt knows me too, but like hyperbole, I think, was kind of lost on her, and my mom was like, no, for the most part everybody knows me, this is the way I've always been, so that they get it. I think there was one other time, a girlfriend of mine from high school, I made a joke about like, all of your guys' spouses are really hideous. Oh, except yours. Yours is really good looking. And a girlfriend of mine was like, come on, Nikki. It's about more than just like looks. And I was all, it's called a joke. It's a joke. Oh, I know this is supposed to be a funny joke. Well, then, really, there's only like two instances I can think of where I had to explain like a joke to some. But otherwise, no, they're either not paying attention to the things that I write, or I'm not controversial enough. I need to be more controversial.
I mean, yeah, literally explaining my jokes was like the first half of my childhood. No, it was all of my childhood. I always loved making jokes and cracking them, but my sense of humor was only recently has been appreciated by people. A lot of times I was just considered the weird, creepy kid who said weird, creepy things. So it's like when I make a joke, I get sent to the principal's office and the guidance counselor takes down my joke in a little notebook. Yeah. And somewhere out there, there's a guidance counselor who has a record of all my jokes that has a fucking gold mine. And if only I could find that guidance counselor and get those jokes from them, I would have like an amazing
all that material.
So much material. I'll have an amazing hour special to sell to HBO and Netflix or whoever the fuck.
Hells yeah.
And make $1 billion. It would be amazing.
I kind of wanted to talk to you guys as a newbie to, you know, comedy in general. I've always been a fan. I've always loved going to shows and love seeing comedians. And as I've, even with my little fun podcast, I'm learning a lot that it takes a lot of writing and it takes like a lot more skill than just being funny with my friends. So I thought maybe as professionals, you could kind of tell me like your journey with it, maybe some misconceptions people have about comedians.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question, please?
Sorry. I shouldn't make it such a vague question. Let's start with what I had on here about how, you know, everyone thinks that they're funny, but not everyone's a comedian.
Sure.
So maybe we kind of like talk about like what the difference between being funny and a comedian is.
That I can do. Do you keep going?
Yeah. There definitely is a difference between being funny and a comedian. And honestly, I feel like I have discovered that I am more of a funny person than I am a comedian. Honestly. I could be a better joke writer if I worked at it. And I don't. I wanted stand-up comedy to be far easier in that respect than I discovered it to be. And once I ran through all of my material, I didn't realize I had bits when I started being a comedian like 7 years ago. And once I ran through all of that I had built up for 35 years at that point, and then I had to start working at it. Well, I didn't like that very much. I just wanted it to be, oh, this is easy, and it just flows right out of me. And it didn't as much. At the same time, being a host, because I hosted open mics and hosted shows, it's much easier for me to riff off other comics than it is for me to sit down and write my own material. I'm great at telling stories. And reactions and little bits. But to sit down and come up with a premise and write a joke is not my strongest suit. It could be if I put effort into it, and I don't wanna. So I think I'm a better comedic actress than I am a stand-up comic. Maybe someday I will want to work on it. I don't at the moment. So that's my take on it at the moment. Adam?
I will just add, before I get to my little story, that you really are a ridiculously funny comedian. Whatever your writing skills are, or whatever you think they are, I'm just going to stop talking because I have no point to make on that last sentence I said. The point is, you are ridiculously fucking funny. You are a hilarious host. You've done, I don't know. He's funny as fucking hell. Fucking personally, I just, I just think it's a question in a different way, in that, like, in terms of what is the difference between a person who is funny and a person who is not funny. Like, you are a fucking funny person. Me, I am a funny person. Yeah. Justin is a fan of people who are funny. And that is a very valuable thing to be, okay? We need as many as we can get, okay? We need as many as we can get. I'm fucking with you. I'm fucking with you. You're fucking funny as hell. You're a funny dude. Pound it. There you go. In case you're wondering, when I said pound it, I was talking about us having...
That was with fists we pounded it?
Yes. Yeah. I can corroborate that.
I'm not saying where the fist went. I'll leave that up to your imagination. But we did some pounding.
I will neither confirm nor deny.
But the point is, I think that non-funny people think that funniness is just basically giving people a hard time and making fun of people and tearing people down and insulting people. And it's not that being funny doesn't involve those things, but you do it creatively. You do it like with love. You do it like we made a comment about Justin looking like the bastard son of Steve Martin because he looks like the bastard son of Steve Martin. That is both an insult and a compliment at the exact same time.
Correct.
And in his observation, that is very accurate.
Yes.
That Nikki and I can both agree he looks like the bastard son of Steve Martin. He has Steve Martin type hair.
I mean, I've had worse comparisons, so that's totally fine.
I'm sure you have. I am not going to even get into the terrible comparisons I've had.
Well, and I'm
going
to say this. Steve Martin... hot as fuck.
Oh my God, yeah, seriously.
Holy balls.
Jesus
and
Christ, yeah.
Hilarious and a degree in philosophy, which...
And he can play the shit out of fucking banjo, too.
Yeah.
He can play, like, you want some fucking bluegrass, he will play you some goddamn bluegrass.
Makes me all kind of bothered in my nether regions.
I'm bothered in my nether regions as well.
See?
I will say that.
It's universal across
totally.
The board. Yeah.
He's fucking amazing.
So these are all good things, y'all.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, like there's a lot of things. Just because somebody laughs doesn't mean they think it's funny. I'm going to tell you that right now.
People laugh at weird, awkward things because they don't know how else to react to them.
And somebody can say something to you and then they say, oh, I'm just kidding.
And that's like an excuse for like being an insulting fucking cunt.
That doesn't mean that they're joking.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all.
They're projecting. They're being a dick. Oh, I love sarcasm. Sarcasm is anger.
Yeah.
It's not funny. It's anger. It's anger. It's passive-aggressive anger is what it is.
I was going to ask, jump in really quick. Have you ever had, like, guys hit on you by trying to be, like, mean and funny?
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, I'm sure.
Negging?
Negging. It's like the schoolyard, you know, kind of thing. Anyone ever, like, take it, like, too far?
Oh.
Hey, Nikki, you're very pretty, but you'd be even prettier if you smiled more.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, all the... Oh, yeah, the negative, they want you to prove yourself to them. And I'm not buying it.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna, no, fuck directly off. Not, yeah, no. I have an eye thing. I had an eye thing. Forrest Whitaker's my spirit animal. My left eyelid was lower than my right eyelid, and people would make comments about it. And try to like get me pissed off about it or have me say something about it. And I stopped falling for it. I stopped trying to prove myself about it. Oh, does your lazy eye ever make you want to do something good for humanity? Does your lack of tact ever make
you
want to?
Guys are ever intimidated because you're funny, like because you're funnier than them?
Yes.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
I was single for a decade. I think that might have had something to do. Yes. I do. Yes, I do.
I think this is a fun topic because me and Adam were kind of talking about this earlier, you know, is that it's a, you know, a lot of people use comedy to pick up women or guys or something, you know, to be funny. You know, and he was saying, you know, that after the show, sometimes you would have like a boyfriend come up to you because the girlfriend thought you're hilarious, but the boyfriend was a little bit jealous, wanted to make sure, hey, I'm buying this motherfucker a drink, you know, not you.
Yeah, he didn't want his girlfriend to buy us a drink, so he would... buy it himself, because it would just be too demasculating to have his girlfriend buy a total stranger drink. But if he buys a total stranger drink, then it's his decision, so he's being masculine, and that saves his manliness.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, we're pretty fucked up, man. We're kind of assholes. We are just,
You know, there's a lot of raging insecurity out there, and, you know, everybody's got their issues, and, you know, as long as you can, if you can recognize them, and eventually work on them and move past them. That's the goal.
Absolutely.
A lot of people are not self-aware enough to do that. But, yeah. There are a lot of guys that are not secure enough to date a comedian, male or female. They can't handle the attention that another comedian would get. Or they can't. Yeah, absolutely.
That's got to come with the territory. You know, if you're killing it on stage, it's going to be men and women coming up to you later and saying how awesome you are. And if you're in a relationship, I can understand, you know, might be a little bit of an issue as being like kind of a public figure.
Yeah, there was a guy at Mel's once that came up to me afterward and he said, you're hot. You're not that funny. But you're,
what the fuck? Wait, okay,
but you're hot.
Was I hosting or was a host way hosting at the time?
Oh, God. I don't remember. I just know that.
Okay, because if I'm ever hosting a show and somebody comes up to you and says some shit like that, please come to me so I can
kick him out and
ban his ass.
He was an older, skinny, black dude who was kind of drunk.
I think I know the guy you're talking about, and I've been looking for excuses to ban his ass. So, yeah, next time that happens, please fucking tell me so I can fucking ban his ass.
Those were his exact words.
Wow. Holy shit. Yeah.
Have you had to kick out a lot of people from Mel's?
I don't want to say names, but there have been a few people.
Yeah. Not a lot.
Not a lot. I mean, like, literally, like, between maybe three or four people.
Yeah.
And in the, like, 4 years we've been doing this.
It's I mean, you mix alcohol with anything. You mix alcohol
with mental illness. And with resentment, because there's always a little bit of mental illness and a little resentment and a little alcohol always mixed in. And yeah, you get some fucked up situations that you have to deal with. Sadly.
You know, sometimes I've noticed when I've gone to open mics that some people seem to treat it just like a therapy session.
Yes.
Yeah.
You
know? Yes.
How do you feel 100%. about that? Is that appropriate?
It depends. I think if you're coming to an open mic night, your main goal is you want to be funny. Do you want to be honest? Yes. Do you want to be yourself? Absolutely. But your main thing is you want to be funny over absolutely anything yet, anything else. When you come to an open mic night, I think you should have, and maybe this is just me, but I don't think it is, you should have a set list of the jokes you want to tell that you have written and have practiced over and over and over again in front of a mirror or in front of your friends or whoever. And these are the jokes that you really want to tell because these are the jokes that you think will make you a famous, successful comedian. That's what I think. You need to come with your best, you need to put your best foot forward when you're doing open mic comedy. Does everybody do that? Absolutely not. There are a lot of people who come in, they just shout some weird political opinion, or they will just, you know what? I'm going to defer to Nikki. She has way more hosting experience than I do. So
yeah. Like who's like your least favorite open micers, like as a type,
the type that are just there to fuck around. They just want to get up there and they're basically up there to talk to their one friend in the audience and make jokes to their one friend and make fun of their one friend, inside jokes, and not pay attention to anybody else in the room.
People.
The other people that literally treat it like it's therapy and get up there and talk about being raped. I want you to talk about your STDs and all of your, I want you to talk about those things in a joke format.
At least make it a joke. You know?
Right. Yeah. Not literally. So here's what happened to me this week, therapy. Because this is literally not therapy. The whole point of open mic, it is practice for people who want to get on shows. Yeah. So you need to be working on a set that you get up here and say every single week, you say the same set. You're supposed to tweak the joke. You say the joke this week, what worked, what didn't, and then tweak it and come back and say the same fucking set. That's what you're supposed to do in front of it. Hopefully the crowd is different. And that's why you have to go to 5 nights a week and work this shit out. And that's another reason why I don't want to be a stand-up comic, because I can't handle that shit. I don't want to do it. And other people can't. It becomes what I call open mic heroes. And you end up getting the same people that do the same set. They're not tweaking it. They're not trying to improve it. And their friends are laughing at them every week. So you're not getting any different reactions. And you think that your shit is the best, that your shit don't stink. You're not improving because you need to go tell your jokes in a different city, in front of different people, and see if it actually works. I have jokes about me being a pedophile because I'm a pedophile. Santa Barbara don't like to hear that Nikki likes little boys. L.A. eats that shit up. And by little boys, I mean 17-year-old high school boys. So yeah, not that.
I know.
Not that little. They're very pretty.
The number one rule of pedophiles in comedy is that if it is a man pedophiling
it's
after
not
a
okay.
woman, it is not funny. If it's a woman pedophiling after a man or a little boy, that is fucking hilarious.
Right?
I'm sorry, I don't care who you are. To quote Larry the Cable Guy, I don't care who you are. That's funny right there.
And the funny thing is there are a lot of people that definitely don't think that that's okay at all and don't think it's funny. And it's still, people will laugh at it.
Yep.
And that's what it's a great conversation topic. But yeah, you can be in LA and I tell that joke and it kills. And I come up here in Santa Barbara and tell that joke and it is silence. And I go, oh shit. So is it me? Is it the joke? Is it the room? And you have to figure out what is it about that material.
It's always a big combination of all those elements and to figure out. Yeah,
exactly.
It's a big scientific
and
fucking mess.
You really have to work at it to figure out what it is at the timing. Mm-hmm. If I said it in a different way, would it be funny? Or is this joke just shit and it needs to get the fuck out of my set?
Have you found yourself trying to, like, what they call in writing, kill your darlings, where
Ooh.
You think something's, like, super good and
fuck
but
yes.
you just have to get rid of it?
Oh, fuck yeah. Yes.
I just want to correct you. You said the politically correct term. It's actually called kill your babies.
Okay.
And it's called kill your babies for a very specific reason, because you're killing the things that you love.
I see.
That is why it's called that.
Sometimes the thing that you think is going to be the funniest fucking thing on the face of the planet.
Oh, no, yeah.
It's not.
It's
and
not,
something
no,
off
yeah.
the cuff, you just, oh, and it was nothing, is the funniest thing
to you you've ever fucking heard in your life, and you will laugh your fucking ass off every time you think back to it. But then when you tell it to, you know, your fucking neighbor, your sister, your sister, your friend, whoever the fuck, they don't fucking get it. They think you're fucking crazy.
No, you can work and work and work, and this is going to be the most brilliant thing ever. And nobody laughs, and it just doesn't work. But then you're on stage one night and just you say something off the cuff and it fucking kills. It fucking kills. And it ends up being the most brilliant thing that you ever said in your life. And it becomes your signature thing. And it's so frustrating because you want to be able to control it and plan it. And you fucking can't. You can't. And those are the muses. That's how the muses fuck with you. And that's how it works. Let go. Stop trying to control everything and just let go.
God just damn you, go. Greek gods. Why do you do this to us?
And that is the gift that we Greeks keep giving. You're welcome. You're welcome. That and baklava. You're welcome. You're welcome.
And spanakopita. I love me some spanakopita.
See.
I love pie. I love flaky crusts. I love spinach. I love cheese. Mix all those things together. Boom.
What done.
Else? Yeah.
Done.
Done. Exactly.
Bickety bam.
Bickety bam. Boom, boom.
So, you know, speaking of creating things, I know you like to cook a lot, Adam, and you have a show.
I do indeed, actually.
Maybe kind of talk a little bit about that. Like, what do you like to cook?
I would love to. So, yeah, so far I've made 2 episodes of my show, The Mentally Unbalanced Chef. It is a combination of a cooking show and a comedy show. I teach you how to make, in every episode, I'll teach you how to make a meal, and I will take you step by step of how to make that meal, but it's also like a comedy show, so I go off on these weird tangents, God, how to explain it? Yeah, and just have weird little comedy bits in it. I've had two episodes out so far, and the next one is coming out in a week from today. That's going to be the third episode with Mr. Maximilian Robert Lockwood, who's a super funny stand-up comic. I've got some other comics coming up who are going to be guests. And
you do all the shooting and stuff yourself?
I did the last shooting myself. Originally, I had a very funny gentleman by the name of Mr. Stephen Amesboker.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, who, and he would shoot it for me. Because of the pandemic, he just lent me his camera. And so I've just been using that to record. At first I did a couple, movie review shows, and then I eventually started doing, making another episode of Mentium Balance Chef.
Nice. Is that sort of something in, just like with me with the quarantine, is, you know, give you something creative to do?
Yes. I miss stand up so damn much. Yeah. Just to do something funny, to do something funny, do something creative. It's so much goddamn fun. I love it. Yeah. It's great.
Cool. So I know you guys kind of have some shows that you like. You were talking about Gotham, and are you a fan of that show?
I'm a huge fan of the show Gotham.
It looks kind of cheesy, man. I got to be honest. Whenever I
see it. What? You think the show Gotham is cheesy? I can't believe you would say something like that. Yeah. Oh, my God. No, it's the cheesiest show ever.
Like, I saw the kid who's the Joker, and I was like, ooh, I don't know.
It's kind of like, you ever see, like, a so bad it's good movie, like The Room or Troll 2? It's basically the TV show. Not the, I know.
No, that is just bad.
That is just bad.
It's just bad.
There was no enjoyable, no. But no. Like, it's so bad it's a good movie. That is what Gotham is. It is like a so ridiculous off-the-cuff thing. Like, I'm a huge Batman fan. I love me some Batman. He's the greatest guy ever. But basically the concept of the show is we're going to do a show about Batman without Batman. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it turns out people didn't like that idea at all.
It is a comic book, so you can't be like too goofy. But the fact that like all of the villains are like kind of older than him.
That's the thing. It's like,
because they've always been around. It's like
goes for like, I think, five seasons. Starts when Bruce Wayne is like 12 years old, goes until he's like 17 or 18 and leaves Gotham. But he's like a teenager throughout most of the thing, so he's not really doing anything. So it's just all these insane villains and being fought by Commissioner Gordon, and it's just every single, like, literally like every fucking Batman villain makes an appearance on the show.
Is it like a Jesus parable?
Is it
like Batman is Jesus? Are these like, I was gonna say it's like the lost years, but they're not, because this is Jesus as a kid, or like Batman as a kid. Because I know nothing about Gotham except that Gotham, I didn't realize that it wasn't about Batman and he was a kid in it. Wow, this is very interesting. Go on.
Gotham is like, it's like a regular city, but everything is much more flamboyant.
Well, okay, right.
So they have like criminals, like gangsters, but the gangsters are flamboyant. And they have serial killers, but the serial killers are flamboyant.
Like Dick Tracy?
Like Dick Tracy flamboyant? They have themes. They dress up in costumes. So all the gangsters make, all like of Gotham's Batman villains make their appearance in them. All the major villains make their appearance in this show. Like, aside from Two-Face, who we introduced the show, we introduced the character of Harvey Dent, but we never see him become Two-Face.
Interesting.
But aside from that, every Batman villain that ever existed made an appearance on this show. And they are all way fucking older than Batman. Which makes the reason that Batman was able to kick that shit out of this villain so fucking easy. Because Batman, like, when the Riddler is causing trouble, a 30-year-old Batman who, you know, has studied every single martial arts, is decked to the nine in all kinds of weapons, and he will go and he'll face off against a 70-year-old Riddler who has Alzheimer's.
Right.
And he's just like kidnapped what he thinks is the Queen of England, but is actually just like the woman who was working at the local Dairy Queen, and he has her tied up, you know, in what he thinks he's luring her into a lake of piranhas, but it's actually just a bunch of automatic goldfish.
They're sea bass, but they're very ill-tempered.
Sea bass, yeah. Right. That doesn't matter. And Batman comes in, and he just beats the shit out of the Riddler and goes on his merry way. And that's the reason that Batman wins all his fights, because all of his villains are in the fucking 70s, according to the show Gotham.
Well, that's an interesting commentary. Like, is there actual crime going on?
There's nothing but crime going on in Gotham. Every single episode, like, starts off with, oh my god, this criminal, insert name of Batman villain here, has done this horrible thing, insert name of crime here, and we have to stop it. And then they go and Commissioner Gordon and all of his cops, they'll go and try and stop it. Maybe they'll have to make a deal with, like, the Penguin and his gangsters to get their help, because sometimes they have to make deals with gangsters and stuff like that. And then they go and try and stop the crime. But then, oh my god, something even worse happens, to the point where the last season of Gotham is Gotham No Man's Land, where the Joker has blown up all the bridges in the city, and now there is no way out, and the entire city is being run by all the gangs. And the government is about to blow up the city of Gotham.
Wow.
Yeah, it is the most insane show I've ever watched, and I fucking love every minute of it.
Is it still on?
No, it just ended.
So are you a comic book fan, like, overall?
I'm a pretty big comic fan. I mean, I'm a big Batman fan.
Yeah,
I am too.
Batman is my favorite. I used to live with some major comic book nerds, and I would just read through all their stuff. And what I've always loved about Batman is he's incorruptible.
Yeah.
He's the one, even whenever there's always, like, stories where, like, Superman will go evil or there'll be some mind control shit. Batman is
incorruptible. There's no Batman evil.
He can't be. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you know this.
I will say there is one story about Batman going evil, and I'll get that to that point later on the podcast.
Okay.
Go ahead with your
podcast. Yeah, well, I just said a fun fact about Batman. He actually has trained in a meditation so that even if you drug him, he can go and find his personality that is about, like, justice and not killing people. You can't even, like, drug him to be incorruptible.
Wow.
He's like the, I wish I had a better term, but he's basically the Ubermensch. He is, like, the ultimate human example.
Yeah.
He devotes himself entirely to both the spiritual side, to the physical side, to every point that is a mastery of being human, to every point of self-improvement. He is, like, the epitome of that. And there have been a lot of attempts to be like, you know, what's an evil Superman like? Well, maybe he was in the Soviet Union. Maybe he's a Nazi. Maybe Lois died, so that drove him insane, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, Superman's pretty easy to corrupt. All you got to do is get Lois Lane.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Right?
And he wants to kill fucking everybody. Yeah, that's who he is. But Batman, it's like, no, he has his principles. Like, no matter, he has his principles. He saw, in every version of Batman, it's about a billionaire who saw his parents die. He was introduced to the worst side of humanity. It scarred him for life. All he wants to do is correct all of humanity. He will never be able to do this. He will never be able to, he will never be done with his quest, but he will always fight.
And his superpower is money.
Exactly.
That's the best superpower. If you ask me which superpower do you want, Nikki?
I would have said determination over money, but no, yes.
No, his superpower is money. Because, you know, determination, you can get money.
Because there are many billionaires out there, but any of them putting themselves through the rigmarole that Bruce Wayne did? No, they're all a bunch of
pussies.
To your
knowledge, they're not.
So you're saying think secretly training in the Himalayas right now to become the ultimate ninja.
We don't know. He's
ninja.
Bald, man. That thing could be a bald cap, you know. And
maybe.
Tony Stark he's got money. But yeah, but both of those guys use their...
Oh, fuck that Iron Rand loving motherfucker.
But you're right. No, that's a good point. The determination, he can get money.
Yeah.
If you have money, it doesn't mean you can do that you will choose to do, like Lex Luthor had money. But yeah, it doesn't mean he's doing positive shit with it.
Yeah, exactly.
The determination you can do. You're right. I would still choose money if that was a superpower. I would choose the money.
I probably would too. Yeah, I would too.
I don't want to make the money. I just want to have the money.
Exactly. That's the best part of having. It's the best part about having money. About
right.
money.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about making it. It's
I'll go do the good stuff
it.
If you give me the money.
Just exactly.
I'll go do the good stuff. I promise. I promise. Pinky swear.
Yeah.
Pinky swear.
Absolutely.
All right. So, you know, this is a show that we're going to talk about, a show that I haven't seen myself. It looks super cool. But on this show, we always like to talk about movies and TV shows. So they are recommending the show Hannibal. I want to see kind of maybe kind of give me your thoughts on that.
Okay, absolutely. So I was just talking about Batman and how there's never been a really great evil Batman character. Hannibal Lecter is the perfect evil Batman character. He is, in the same way that Batman is like the ultimate example of everything human beings can be, he is the ultimate example of everything human beings can be for the absolute wrong reasons. He is an amazing chef, an amazing therapist, and an amazing surgeon, amazing doctor. And honestly, I think Mads Mikkelsen in the show is kind of a better Hannibal Lecter even than
Anthony Hopkins.
Don't get me wrong, in the first, in Silence of the Lambs, he was amazing in that. That was an amazing performance.
But was an amazing interpretation of Hannibal Lecter for sure.
Absolutely. It was bone chilling. But when you get into the physicality of Hannibal Lecter in the later movies, where in the movie Hannibal, okay, so Anthony Hopkins is talking to an Italian police chief, and he has to drug the Italian police chief, wrestle him to the ground, knock him unconscious with Anthony Hopkins' fists. Using Anthony Hopkins' fists, he knocks this man unconscious.
Right.
He then picks him up, puts him on a rack, and ties the man to this thing, to this gurney, and then wheels him to the very top of the building. And this is all not seen in the movie Hannibal. Like, it's just, he, like, knocks the man unconscious. He, like, poisons him. He's unconscious. And when he wakes up, he is being tied. He is, like, tied to this gurney. He's overlooking, he's on the top of this building. I want to see the scene in between that of Anthony Hopkins, like,
doing all of that,
just knocking those, picking up this, 200-pound Italian guy, put him on the rack, tying him up. Anthony Hopkins, like, you can break him with a piece of French bread. Like,
right.
He is an amazing actor, but in those later, I'm sorry, he was terrible in those later Hannibal Lecter movies. You just couldn't buy that he would be a dangerous
killer. He was older. He was too old. Like, so dangerous old killer for sure, but not to do those kind of things.
Yeah, because every scene where he was dangerous, someone would come in and he would, like, put, like, a chemical to their face,
yeah,
and knock them unconscious. And then they would wake up and they would be, like, tied somewhere. But, like, under no other circumstance did that. That was every single time he was threatening. Because
right,
there was no other time he could be threatening, because he's like Anthony Hopkins. Like, imagine if Anthony Hopkins came at you with a knife right now. You could kick his ass in 3 seconds.
Probably.
Just kick him in the balls, like, take away the knife, gouge out his ear, poke him in the eyes. He would be like, oh, Lord. He'd be out. Like, he would be fucking done.
Right.
What I've kind of seen, I always imagine that that Hannibal Lecter is almost like a Dracula type, that,
yes,
that he lures, ooh, you in with his, like, good looks and wiles, and then uses that to, like, well, is that how it works?
What's really great about the show, let's get into the show, and please jump in any moments you have anything to say, they really get into the motivation of the characters, and they really develop these characters. Like, I liked the movies, the Red Dragon, and the movie, what's the one I came before? Manhunter. And what they do, but Will Graham in that show, he was just, he was FBI man. It was the story of this guy who was in the FBI and how he fought this serial killer named Hannibal Lecter. And it was just, yeah, it was kind of this very just generic story. But with this, what they did was they took, like, these, like, 4 or 5 different books, spaced them all out, and they really took the time to develop these characters. And with Will Graham, kind of by making him kind of, I don't know, just slightly insane, pretty much. First, they said he had Asperger's. And, I have something to say about that, because in the very first episode of this, they say that the character Will Graham has Asperger's, and that's why he can't communicate with serial killers, because people with Asperger's are very similar to people who are psychopaths or sociopaths. As someone with Asperger's, I have to say this. That's actually pretty fucking fair. That actually makes a lot of sense. I've known a lot of batshit insane people with Asperger's who have like no sympathy, no empathy, and want to go out and just bash people on the head because they're angry. That is absolutely fair. That is, yeah. But they just kind of keep developing it to sort of fit whatever the story is. Like, he has an empathy disorder, so he can look into the mind of all the serial killers. But he also has a brain hemorrhage, so he has all these hallucinations. But all of his hallucinations are also prophetic and actual, and kind of tell him what's going on.
Now, in the TV show, Will Graham's therapist is Hannibal Lecter.
Yes.
So that's what makes this interesting.
Yes, exactly.
Is this is his introduction. This is what makes this fucked in the head, is that Will Graham is the main character of this show.
Yes.
And he is seeing a therapist. His therapist is Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
Who, come to find out when you're watching the show, is a serial killer. And eventually Will is going to pick up on that.
And it doesn't end well for Will when he picks up on that.
Doesn't really.
We can spoil pretty much the entire show here.
Yeah, spoiler alert. The show's been out for a while. If you don't want to know how it ends, don't
watch it right now. Go watch it.
Yeah, it's an amazing show.
Hannibal Lecter is arrested and at the end of it, right? Yeah. I guess it's like a prequel. Can you spoil a prequel? You know?
I don't know if you saw the very ending of the show, but you absolutely can't spoil that because it kind of spits in the face. I'll get into the ending of the show.
If you've never seen Silence of the Lambs, you might not know how Hannibal
Guess what?
Ends.
Silence of the Lambs never happens because I'm not going to know. We'll get into that later.
Okay, kind of like an alternate universe.
Right, yeah, yeah. Okay. So this is, this is a different, an alternate universe.
Alternate dimension of,
Yeah, and Hannibal Lecter has a therapist because therapists
Who is Gillian Anderson, a.k.a. Scully from X-Files.
Yeah. So that's interesting to see. It's always interesting to me to see a therapist.
Yeah.
Like in The Sopranos.
When Malfi would go and see that guy who was a director in the 70s. I can't remember his name, but she was...
The therapist's therapist.
Yes. Therapist.
I love seeing that.
Yeah.
So that's... The meta-ness of all of it. Very interesting. I agree. I liked watching Will have, oddly enough, empathy for people with no empathy. Being able to understand.
Yes. The big strength of the show is that both a combination of a weekly procedural kind of show where every week there is a new serial killer who they have to take down, whether it's Will or in later in the second season if it's Hannibal Lecter, or a combination thereof in later seasons. There's always the really great week-to-week serial killer. And what's great is that the week-to-week serial killer, not like the week part of the show, it's like fucking... It's like what makes the show great is that you have really well written characters, great dialogue, lots of gore, lots of blood, and like a David Lynchian amount of surreal imagery,
but not as David Lynchian,
because it promotes the story. It, like every image you see tells a story.
It's not as outlandishly bizarre. Enough outlandishly bizarre.
No, exactly.
And beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
Yes,
amazing. And there's the one serial killer who, because you have to admire him because he is like the liberal serial killer. I think you might know who I'm talking about. He is a gentleman who, he doesn't see race. He doesn't see color. He thinks everyone is equally beautiful. So you know what he does?
Does he wear their skin?
Close. He collects one person of every single race and shade. And puts them all in a giant color wheel so that there's like this giant image. So it's like a giant eye that's looking up out of the sky of just dead bodies.
God damn it. That's right.
Yes. Remember the episode? Yeah.
Ah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Fuck.
Such an insane show.
God, that was so good.
It really was.
And that's what's beautiful about this is that Will is trying to figure out who this serial killer is in the first season. And Hannibal is trying to help Will figure it out.
Yes. That's what's so great is like the way, because for the first season, like there's this whole long arc of like, what is Hannibal like just playing with Will? What does he want to do? And he, you kind of get an idea of what his plan is. He ends up kind of, can we spoil it? What sure. he does? Yeah, he frames him for all of his murders.
Right.
Which was kind of an improvised plan.
Right.
Like, we get hints of it. Like, we see him in a couple, like, in the first couple episodes, go into Will's house, see his fly fishing trophies. He's like, he makes, like, little fly fishing lures. And he ends up using those to frame him by putting, like, human remains on his fly fishing.
Right.
And uses that. But, yeah, it doesn't seem like he doesn't want to do that. He wants, like, him to be, like, his protege. Like, he wants to turn Will into a serial killer.
Right.
And, like, he wants to kill with them together. Because they have a, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they have, like, a very Batman-Joker relationship.
Right.
Like Hannibal Lecter is the evil Batman. Like, he is everything you want in the Ubermensch human being, but for the darkest purposes.
It's the ego.
The ego, yes. The pure
ego.
Like, when it gets revealed why Hannibal Lecter, at the very end of the first season, why he did all these things, he says, because I wanted to see what happened. Like, yeah. He was just curious. Like, what if I sent the serial killer to the house of this FBI person? Will he kill the FBI person? Or will the FBI person kill him? I don't know, but I'm curious to see what happens, so go ahead.
Right. Yeah, it's a game.
It's just, yes,
it's a game. And it's an experiment. And as a psychologist, he's seeing how everybody's going to react. And yes. As a serial killer, he can legitimately help Will figure out and send him on the right path and see how Will's going to react. And what's interesting about all of this is that Mindhunter is based on... Did I say Mindhunter?
Yeah, Mindhunter. Yeah, the first movie.
Is based on Mindhunter. The TV show on Netflix? You know that TV show on Mindhunter?
Yeah, I love Mindhunter.
That's a really good one. I like that
show. The book written by the man who invented profiling.
Really? Okay.
So Silence of the Lambs was based on him interviewing Kemper.
Wow. And let's get into the profiling aspect of the show. Because do you remember a show called Millennium? Did you watch that?
I didn't. I know of it, but I did not.
Because that was a similar premise. There was a guy played by Lance Henriksen, the robot from Alien 2 and many other shows.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah.
He was this FBI profiler who had this... He was kind of like Will Graham because he had the ability to look into the mind of the serial killer.
Right.
But when he would like go into a crime scene and he would like
close
his eyes... And he would, like, see himself in the mind of the serial killer. So he didn't see himself kill the victim.
Right.
But when Will would do it, he would go in and he would slow down time. You would see the scene change. Time would go forward. Time would go backward. Time would slow down. Time would speed up. Like, it was this whole experience of, like, Will getting into the mind of the killer.
And that's the intuition that I think and I can't remember his name, and there are certain people out there that are going to murder me for that. Ha ha! No pun intended. Manhunter was the name of the first movie.
Yes.
And book before Silence of the Lambs. Manhunter. The man who invented profiling, he had an intuition. And I think when you have an intuition, that's kind of what it's like in your head, that you can see everything like that. And Hannibal Lecter being Kemper... Kemper could tell him, okay, well, here's the guy that you're looking for, the serial killer you're trying to find. If you're trying to find BTK, here's what he's like. This is the guy, this is his MO. He wants to go back to the scene of the crime. He's going to do this because that's what Kemper did. He tried to help them find other people and gave them insight because he was a killer. Here's what I did. Here's what I would do. So that's, he took all that information and that's what he wrote that book on was, it was based on that that information. Right. So Hannibal is doing the same thing. Oh, here, I can give you some information because I am actually a serial killer, though you don't know it.
Yeah,
here's some info. Let me throw that at you. And the ego, oh, I want a protege. But I want everybody to know. I want credit, but I don't want anybody to know. And who can I control and who can I,
yeah. And how can you argue with Eddie Izzard playing a crazy serial killer? How fucking awesome was he on that?
Oh my God.
Eddie Izzard played Dr. Chilton is also a character on this show. And one of the great parts of the show is watching all the terrible things that happen to Dr. Chilton, because he's the worst character that's ever existed in all of fiction. He was terrible in Silence of the Lambs. He was terrible in all the other movies. And he's terrible in the show. He's always the biggest fucking asshole you've ever met in your life.
You want him to get eaten.
You want him to get killed. You want him to get eaten.
I'm having an old friend for dinner.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Yeah.
Such a fucking asshole, yeah. He gets fucked up a lot in that goddamn show.
Yes.
So many times. But he makes it alive because, yeah, he has to because he has to make Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, Eddie Izzard cuts him open and removes all of his organs and hangs them up on hooks. So when the FBI comes in, he's just displayed on this table. All of his organs are on hooks above of him. And this drop-dead gorgeous red-headed woman who used to be in The Red Dragon Woman was played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. This version is played by a drop-dead gorgeous redhead woman. And for whatever reason. And who is like pumping oxygen into his chest. And yeah, he's just all of his organs just played everywhere. Yeah. I thought that was funny. And now just as I said it aloud, I realized, no, it's actually horrible.
But, yeah, but funny.
But yeah. Funny, yeah. It was so over the top. That's what I love about the show. It's so over the top.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard, Nikki, that you're kind of a true crime expert. And, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, the fascination with serial killers and that, you know, there's so many shows on Netflix about it. There's so much. Why do you think we have such a morbid curiosity?
I think that it's the closest you can get to evil without it actually affecting you. Watching shows or like I personally, let's creep everybody out, I stalk famous murder sites. It's not unlike going to like a Civil War site or any other kind of, I want to say like 9/11, historical, Oklahoma City bombing. It's no different to me. It's history. It's history. I've been to the La Bianca house. That's fucking history. I stood there in front of it and went, oh my God, this is real. It's not a story on TV. This is real. Real people died here. And try to wrap my brain around the fact that, oh my God, it's the safest you can come to real evil. And it's utterly fascinating. I will also add that people with depression are more prone to be obsessed with people who are into true crime and serial killers. And I fall into that category, everyone. I definitely fall into that category.
Now, I understand the historical part. As a matter of fact, there was a while where I was very fascinated with the with Nazis, actual Nazis, and just the idea that a group of people, well-to-do Germans, could suddenly, as a population, turn evil. Not to make this show too heavy, but one of like the big misconceptions is that Hitler was in charge of it all. It wasn't.
He had
the
support of
the people.
There was there was another guy who like literally like said like, I need to find the Messiah for all of Germany. I can't remember his name, but he was like this big, fat, hard-drinking German politician at the time. He was like involved in the same political movement that Hitler became involved in, but he like found Hitler and was like, yes, this is the guy. He was the guy who discovered Elvis. Like he found Hitler, like
he's the figurehead.
He gave us a little speech. He was like, that guy, he's going to be in charge. And so he started like taking him on to parties and introducing him to society. And he had like groom him because Hitler had very bad social skills. Surprise, surprise.
Weird.
Adolf Hitler, very bad social skills. And would just kind of rant and rave at people.
Yeah.
And so he would, like,
you know, you're kind of talking about, you know, feeling maybe a little bit bad about it, like with, or having that obsession with it. And it was funny whenever I was on my Nazi kick, I had this big red and black, like swastika book in my bathroom that my friends were not the biggest fan of. Right. First seeing, I'm like, I'm not worshiping them. I think it's a fascinating story. And the book was about how they lost and how they kind of lost the soul of the German people. And, you know, the war in general. But yeah, I understand about having weird things you're obsessed with that people might not understand.
Definitely. Like, yeah, people think that Charlie Manson was a serial killer. He wasn't. He killed somebody. But
yeah, he killed a couple, at least maybe one.
He killed one person.
One person, yeah.
But he, yeah, he was not involved with any of the Tate murders.
Yeah, he just fucking told those hippie kids, he gave him acid and gave him a mission and told him about a race war. And
he influenced them for sure. Yeah. But yeah, and especially being a woman, people assume that, oh, you want to have sex with all of these serial killers.
Wow.
No.
That's, yeah.
Negative.
That sounds like a horribly offensive thing to say to somebody. That's,
It is. And that's a go-to. Oh, you just want to fuck them all. No.
Yeah, that's
I don't. Sad. First of all, Ted Bundy, he was a 5 at best.
Mm-hmm.
Not attractive. Zac Efron, infinitely more attractive.
So much better, yeah.
You know what Zac Efron can murder? This pussy is what he can murder. Fuck yes. Yeah, no. I mean, Dahmer was a good-looking dude. He was.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
That doesn't... I don't want to have sex with any of these fucking psychopaths. That has nothing to do with my interest in their depravity and their fucking insanity. And if nobody was interested in any of them, nobody would catch any of them. And this is the same problem that the people who invented profiling had with the FBI. The FBI said, why do you want to talk to these psychopaths? To figure out how to fucking catch them, you fucking douchebags. Oh my God. And there were people that wanted to fuck Ted Bundy. The women that sat there in the courtroom and went, nah, he didn't.
Do you remember the Boston bomber, that young kid?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
He was on the cover of Rolling Stone. I had a few friends where I was like, take it easy, girl. Like,
she's
like, the mass murder. Because he was a handsome young man. Looked like he was in a rock. Looked like he was in a Strokes. Like, he was like super good looking. And he was on the cover of Rolling Stone. And there were a few of my friends like, wow, I totally want some of that. I was like, but he killed a bunch of people. Like, no.
Yeah. When the Zac Efron Ted Bundy movie came out, people were complaining, oh, they're sexualizing Ted Bundy. And I'm like, you're missing the point. You're missing the point. The fact that the man was attractive, you're proving the point is what you're doing. He was attractive. And therefore, you assume that he couldn't have done anything that terrible. You don't need to sexualize him. He is sexualized.
I think attractive people get away with a lot.
They can.
Yeah, they can get away with a lot if you're attractive.
They can. Oh, yeah, no, look at him. He doesn't look like a psychopath. And that is the problem. Is BTK, not he was an attractive man, but when they were profiling him, oh, there's no way this man goes to church. He was practically a deacon at his church. If he wasn't a deacon at the church.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and wasn't the Golden Gate Killer?
Golden State Killer was a fucking cop.
Yeah, wow, Jesus Christ.
So there's no, he looks like a serial killer.
Yeah.
There is no look. If there was, we would just scoop everybody up. Like, that's the problem, is there's no look. Richard Ramirez was a good looking dude, and there were chicks that wanted to fuck that dude too, and he raped random old ladies. Nah.
Wow.
Nah. Nice. He didn't do it. Nah. I don't, what? What the F? No. No. If I found out that Zac Efron, like, murdered some people, no, I still wouldn't.
So on my second show, I had a Texas rapper on, and we were talking about dating girls, and something he brought up was that he used to be like a gentleman, nice guy, and in his own words, girls like bad guys. That's what he said in his own way. And this sort of, to me, is like the whole idea of that, like, nice guys finish last, and especially as a female, I love to kind of hear like you like debunk that or kind of say where that comes from. Like, you know, do nice guys finish last? Do girls just like bad boys?
Well, what do you mean by nice guy?
See, that's the question.
There are a lot of guys that think nice guy. They hear the word nice and automatically think that means polite. It doesn't. Nice guys do finish last because nice doesn't mean polite. Nice means pansy. Grow a set of fucking balls. Nice guys tell you they're nice. We don't want you to tell us you're nice. Good men show you that they're good men over time. Nice guys say things like, well, let me know when you want to hang out. They leave the ball in your court because they're too afraid of rejection. They want the woman to take the lead. I don't want to go out with a guy who doesn't have the fucking balls to ask me out. So nice guys complain that women want bad boys when bad boys apparently are guys that have the guts to say, hey, want to go out Friday night at 7? That's what apparently a bad boy
and that's sort of been my sneaking suspicion. And what I especially find disturbing is people who go on the, oh, I'm a nice guy and they don't like me. And they're, you know, using in a way, it's almost like they're trying to trick some pussy. Like they're trying to, you know, pretend to be like a friend and then wait till like the second it pounce, which with this Texan rapper guy, I think it's the reason why he does well with women is they fucking look at him and they know what they're going to get. You know, like they see this dude who's like, hey, you want to have some fun? And it isn't like, hey, you want to hang out and like watch a movie and smoke some weed.
That's what a nice guy is they do. They play that. They don't take the risk. We want you to take the lead. I'll suggest this, and if she doesn't like it, then I was kidding. We don't like that you're being feminine. I'm going to go there.
You don't want a wishy-washy little bitch.
We don't want a wishy-washy little bitch. We want you to take the risk. Take the risk. That sexy, fair heart never. Fair heart never won. Faint heart never won, fair lady. Okay. Nice guys also have a string of she done me wrong stories. And every girl they dated was a psycho. Every girl they dated was a bitch. Every girl they dated treated them wrong. There's nothing sexy about that. Nothing. Nice guys also, I've been on dates with guys that right out the gate, they're like, so when was the last time you had sex? How many people have you had sex with?
Who the fuck are these psychos?
You live with your parents? So how do you have sex? A guy that I was on a date with, seriously, we sat down at the table. He leaned out from the table and looked me up and down. So looked me up and down and looked back up at me. And then they get pissed. They come. I've had a guy came from L.A. 2 hours, drove from L.A., went to dinner, seriously popped a Viagra.
Oh, God, he assumed, really?
He assumed, never had a fucking discussion with me, assumed, well, I drove all this way.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if you do it in the bathroom where she can't see, but right in front of you, seriously? Oh, my God.
And even if he didn't, even if he hadn't done that.
Yeah, even though that alone is fucking disgusting.
To flat out tell me, I spent money. And I drove all. I drove all this way.
Oh, find a prostitute.
Yeah, seriously,
I owed him.
Yeah,
those are nice guys.
Men are very entitled. I can say this as a man. There's whenever rejection feels like you failed, and something I've tried to keep in mind is that it's nothing personal. You know, if someone rejects you, it's nothing personal. But a lot of men, you know, we're the king of the castle here. You know, and how dare you not want what I'm given?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think part of the thing that makes a nice guy turn into a nice guy is if you pine away for a girl for months before you make a move, you're gonna get way more butthurt and disappointed if you get rejected.
Made that mistake a million times.
Than if you made a move now. If she says no, then next, move on. I'll tell you that this is the best story. I was at a bar, knew the guy, watched him walk in, and watched him walk up to every girl in the bar and ask them on a date. He got to me, and I wanted to say yes simply because he had the fucking balls to do it. And I watched him go, yeah, okay. Like courage, confidence, courage, that is sexy. I had no interest in this man, none at all. But I was like, he had the courage and the confidence. Okay, that's all it takes, guys, that literally have a plan. Hey, you want to go to Ventiki Friday night at 7? That is literally all you have to. Okay, have a plan. Have no reason for me to say no. That there's no reason for me to say no. Have a plan. Please, for the love of fucking God. Because the guys I am meeting online, they're like, oh, my schedule is wide open.
Oh, God, yeah.
They want me to apparently to make all the plans. I'm tired of being the dude.
Yeah. I think the thing is that guys just don't know, like, where... I don't want to make any excuses for stupid guys. Stupid guys are stupid because they're stupid. But I guess it's like people don't know. Like, I don't know, like, I guess, like, they people feel like dating's changed a lot, and the dynamics and of sex has changed in this country. Feminism has changed the way women interact in this country, and men just don't really know anymore. Like, okay, so is it okay if I work with a girl? Can I ask her out? Or is that not okay? Or should I, like, if I'm interested in a woman at work, should I quit and then wait till, like, 3 weeks and then ask her out? Like, they just don't know, like, what exactly the politics are.
Totally. I've heard guys say that they don't know what to do anymore. And I know that there are women that out there like, I don't want to wait, and I should be able to ask guys and equality. And I say, fuck all of that.
Yeah.
Every last fucking bit of it. It's called biology.
Yeah.
Men pursue and women accept. Mm-hmm. And we both have to work at different things in order for that. And I think that's why we're all fucking miserable, is because women have become masculine and men have become feminine.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
None of us are comfortable doing that.
Mm-hmm. It goes against our natural instincts, yes. Goes against natural ways. Yeah.
It does. And if we all would stop trying to be something that we're not.
Because there are so many fucking, like, you know, sexist, racist bigots out there who just fucking ruined it for everyone else. Yeah. Now we all have to, like, talk in this overindulgent PC code,
yeah,
that just makes, like, just, like, dating and relationships fucking, like, so difficult,
yeah,
than that should be.
I mean, I've sometimes thought that, especially with younger women, that it's almost weird to go up to someone just on the streets. You know, isn't there a comfort to the app in a way? Like, that, you know, you don't have to be worried about, like, a creep or something. Or this is just, like I said, I don't know the answer because I feel the exact same way. I, especially moving here and dating, like, younger women, I feel like it's, if I've tried just to hit on someone in real life, it can come off kind of weird. Their boyfriend might be there. They kind of like the safety of the app.
I don't. I hate the apps. I've been on the app for 11 years. Yeah. Fuck dating apps. I'm Gen X. So I know the time before the interwebs, and it'd be one thing to be, and I've had guys walk up to me in a parking garage and hit on me. That's a little creepy. But at a bookstore, at a coffee shop, when it's normal and natural, and I don't even realize I'm being hit on because it makes sense, because you've got a book or you've got some, it's natural conversation. It makes sense. There's nothing to me creepy about that at all. And you have to take the risk. Maybe she does have a boyfriend. That's why you don't come on super hard and super gross. What was I going to say? Fuck balls. I can't remember.
I think you wanted to say balls.
God damn it. You're right. Exactly what you you're to right. Say. I yeah. did. I'm not saying women have to sit back and be dainty and not say a word and not do anything. You give cues. You show interest, you do all kinds of things, but I'm gonna tell you, as an overly aggressive woman who spent my whole life, oh, he doesn't know I'm interested, I should be more obvious about it. Nope. If he's not asking you out, he's not interested. Well, maybe he's shy. Nope. He's not interested. Stop it. Stop it. Oh my fucking God, stop it. Women, stop asking men out. He's not fucking interested. That's why he's not asking you out. Oh my God, stop. I'm sorry. Sorry, I'm very, very angry by that. But yeah, there's all kinds of things you can do to show somebody that you're interested. And men, fucking just ask. Just bite the bullet and ask. Stop being worried about how it's going to go. Don't shit where you eat. Don't ask women out that you work with. It's a bet. It's from time immemorial, it's been bad news bears. If they quit, jump on it.
But what if you want to ask out a girl, but she's, like, way above your social status?
Fuck it. Should ask
you,
her.
But should you try and, like, work on adjusting your social status before you ask her out?
I say take the risk.
Take the risk?
Bottom line, men are going to focus on, if you didn't know.
You hear that, Annabelle? I'm coming for you.
Yes. Guys typically want to have their shit together before they really look into getting into a relationship.
Yeah.
If they're smart. So you want to have your finances or you want to have your living situation in order. Otherwise, you probably shouldn't be dating dudes.
Yeah, where are you going to bring them, you know? Yeah.
Thank you.
Exactly, yeah, that was somewhere.
Because I have friends
who... just living underneath a bridge and then, like, what? You just asked to borrow the communal tent for the night? Like,
I have a friend who doesn't have a job or a car who still lives with his ex-girlfriend.
I will say this. Pussy, I had a brief period in my 20s where I was homeless and I had two girlfriends at the same time. It was the first time ever. I had no, it honestly makes me depressed about like working. And
okay,
like,
well, fuck you, because I had a brief period in my time. In my life, I was
just killing it on the game. I think it's because I was literally just needed like a bed to sleep in. And so I would
And you're cute as shit. And there are women with no standards.
And it was just insane. I had two Lauras.
Yeah, I had a brief time in my life where I was homeless and I couldn't get laid to save my life. So congratulations, right. I guess.
I'm sorry about that. Maybe I shouldn't bring this up, but it's just something I joke with my friends who are really like money oriented. Like, oh, I got to get rich so I can get some chicks. I'm like, I had the most action whenever I was totally broke.
That's the thing.
It's a good story. I mean,
that's the thing. It's really like there are women out there that are obsessed with money.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's all that they care about. You don't want those. You focus on you.
Yeah.
And fuck this. You're out of my league. Mm-hmm. Confidence. Confident in who you are and what you're doing with your life. And ask a woman out, because that's, we feel that. We feel that. Oh, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's after. He knows where he's going. He knows who he is. And that, to the right woman, is going to be more important than anything else.
Okay, I'm going to, kind of running low on time. I have one last thing I want to bring up, and I think this would be good with you. And that is, what is some bad advice that you fell for? I'll start with you, Adam.
Oh, I'm going to need a minute to think about this. So do you want to take this?
Hey, Nikki, ask him out. Go ahead. Ask him out. You should call him. You should totally ask him out. Yeah. You should drive across the country, Nikki. You should totally do that.
Well, Adam, you mentioned, moving from New York to San Francisco was a bad choice.
I was about to say, moving from New York to San Francisco is probably the biggest mistake I ever made in my life. And I was like fighting with my dad and stepmom a lot of the time. So I guess I thought moving to San Francisco and living with my mom would be a big improvement. But yeah, that was a huge mistake. I should have stayed in New York, should have worked on comedy, should have taken class at the UCB theater, like open mic and like improv theater and stuff like that. And
but were you given advice to not do that? Like, really?
I was like, you should go to San Francisco. And I think that's, and people were like, yeah, that's the best thing for you. And no, I should have stayed in New York. That was,
but San Francisco has a huge comedy scene.
Not as big as New York. Honestly, like open mics, there was one huge open mic scene in San Francisco, the rest are all in the outer areas. And that one's gone now. There's a couple comedy clubs and like a couple open mic places, but it's a pretty small scene.
So did they tell you, as far as comedy goes, that you should go to San Francisco to pursue comedy?
No.
Just in general, they're like, San Francisco, that's your bag.
No, it was just in general, San Francisco, that's your bag. This was before I got into comedy.
Okay.
It was just like, in looking back in retrospective, I immediately got into all that stuff. Like immediately after I graduated, it was just like, at the time, I just was taking bad advice, and I should have stayed in Brooklyn.
Well, you wouldn't be here now, damn it.
I would have made my way here eventually, just on different circumstances.
You wouldn't be sitting on this couch here now, damn it.
Actually, this couch has literally been in my family for generations. My great-great-grandfather came to this country with 5 potatoes and this couch.
Did he sail over on this couch?
On this couch, yeah. He put a big, sail on it, and just sailed across from Ireland to...
That is inventive.
It is, isn't it?
You're creative people.
We are. I think so.
Well, guys, it's been a long conversation we've had. It's been super fun. I'm so glad I could get two people on this show. I really love having guests on. It's kind of lame when it's just me talking. So it's so nice to have you both on. And I'd like to give you an opportunity both to talk about something you're working on, or maybe like a website or anything. I know with your show on YouTube, this is kind of your chance to like plug the audience.
Woo-woo!
So on YouTube, The Men Think About Chef, I have a new episode coming out in a couple days. The third episode, but the 2 episodes are up right now. So if you like comedy, and if you like cooking, and if you like cooking combined with comedy, please check out that show. So yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
I write articles about relationship advice. I have a great article about why it's okay to not be attracted to nice guys on medium.com. Check me out, Nikki Marinas. That's my name. I host a podcast called Lyrical Crimes with my friend Eric Schlelein. We talk about really terrible song lyrics and dissect them and find out whether or not they actually suck or if there actually is some merit to them. Nikki Marinas, that's my name. That's correct. I had to make sure that I got that right. Sometimes I screw up my own name. So check out my crap. I hope it's not too crappy. I like it.
Excellent. And my name is Adam Casey Elder, just in case you're wondering. So
awesome. Well, thank you guys so much.
132 in Bush. I've got him at gunpoint.
Okay, gunpoint 132 in Bush. Covers code 3.
Okay.
Get 2514. Can transmit on tech 2.
Okay, we'll still send it code 3.
Well, guys, that was a fun talk we had. I'm very tight on megabytes, so I'm going to try to get my parts out of the way as quick as possible. But please check out their stuff. Follow them on social media. And for me, you know my social media stuff. So lower your expectation. All you got to do is Google it. You'll find me. I would like one thing, though, for you to do. It could really, really help me is to rate the show. Go ahead and just go in and give the show a nice rating for me. It really helps with the search if you're using iTunes. I'm not going to ever do it myself. I think that's super lame for people to rate something that they work on. I've been asked to do this before on projects, and if anyone who I work with is listening, I'm never going to do that. All right. So thank you so much for listening. And before you go,